Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
What's wrong, Jim? You look upset.
Well, you know all the problems lately with the Postal Service?
Yeah.
The mailman's been jerking me round.
Oh no, what happened?
He put my $1 million check in someone else's box. Okay, Patrick, so just a little bit of setup here for Tuesday.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. We are continuing our Prince countdown. We recorded this as a virtual event with, I want to say there were about 35, 40 people on the Zoom that day.
It was a great crowd, yeah. We were like, hey, I hope we get like five people, and then all these people showed up, so it was excellent.
It was great. So we recorded it all off of the Zoom, and... Mm-hmm. You'll hear it throughout the week, and if you didn't hear the first part of the countdown, that's yesterday's episode. Go back and listen to that, and then you'll be all caught up as to, you know, what's going on, right? And why you hear crickets.
That's exactly right.
You took care of the cricket in your basement. That's gone now, right?
Yeah, we got the cricket out of there. It was a one-time event, but the timing, and that cricket really wanted to chime in on Prince.
That's right.
It did, yeah.
All right. Okay, so we're at the point here now. Let's see, 15, 14, 13. You're going to hear, starting with number 12 on the countdown. Here we go. Pop Life. I love this song, and it's hard for me to explain exactly why I love it so much. It's just, you know, it's just a great, like, sort of slow jam, you know. It's just an amazing groove, and I think I think that's what just sells the song, right?
Yeah, without a doubt. And I think when you think about Prince from 1984 to 1987, his massive commercial period, in my view. I mean, obviously 1999 was a pretty successful album, but it's just really set the stage for what happened with Purple Rain, Around the World in a Day, and Parade. One of the greatest American musician periods of creativity, I think, in music history, right? I mean, it rivals anything Dylan did in the 60s and almost anybody you can name. I mean, it's incredible. And the different styles he worked in,
right,
you know, across these records are just literally mind blowing. I mean, it's really hard to appreciate sometimes because his music is so popular and he was such a ubiquitous figure and his image was so unique and all that stuff. But to get down to the nitty gritty, like you said, it's just amazing song after amazing song. Yeah. They're put together so beautifully.
And you're going to hear this when we get to the end of this, and Patrick and I reveal our own personal top tens. The difficulty on it was I tried to not pick all hit songs, but it's so hard. Like, his hit songs are so great, you know, that it's just amazing. This song, Pop Life, I was surprised to see this today. This was a number 7. This was a top 10 hit song after a whole string of top 10s that he had coming off of Purple Rain and then Around the World in a Day.
Rivals Creedence Clearwater Revival too, and they had an amazing run of hits in a short period of time. But man, you could put Prince right up there with how big and how successful these songs were, and they crossed barriers too. They were huge hits on, you know, whatever the heck Billboard's, you know, called R&B records or dance records or funk records or, you know, right, however they broke it down. But his records were played all the time. I think Jody said in the chat, like, they used to play them in dance clubs in DC, and they would, you know, they would play them everywhere. And it's just,
yeah,
I mean, I think when you're living through it, it seemed, you know, like he was just everywhere all the time and you took him for granted. But when you go back and think about how amazing it was, it, you know, it takes a while to understand it.
And I think you made a really good point too, Patrick, which is that the variety is really the key. The songs, mm-hmm, Prince songs don't all sound the same. They've, you know, actually sound quite different. And I think that's really the beauty of him as an artist. And I think fans who love his music, really appreciate that about him, you know.
Yeah,
that you get something different out of all the songs. Now I want to address one thing here that BJ said, because I'm listening to this as we're recording, I'm listening to this in headphones, and I think Pop Life is a good example of a headphone kind of song, because you hear this like echo thing going on with the vocals. BJ, can you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I just realized now that that the vocal, it sounds like it's a Van Halen thing where you get the reverb in the one channel and the actual track in the other. In this case, the vocals are coming in my right, and it sounded like a reverb in the left. I was like, man, that's really good. And then I started paying attention to what the left one was doing versus the right one, and realized that they weren't exactly the same vocal.
Right.
There's a couple little things. So he actually took a second vocal track and offset that to make it sound like a really, or either him or whoever was doing the producing, because he often had other people produce his songs. Whoever did that's just genius. And I'm like today years old when I learned that, and I don't know how many times I've listened to this song.
Amazing.
But it's just one of the, I guess that's a sign of it, both a great production and a really good song, that you have to listen to it for 30 years or whatever, and you finally figure something out.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's just little tricks like that. Little tiny things show up in you know, really well-produced and well-written songs that can really keep things interesting over the decades.
Well said.
I think the other thing that's great about this song, too, is lyrically, it's just about all these like little things that just sort of get you down, right? That dragging you down, right? And it's just about sort of going through life and just the general kind of like annoyances and things that happen. And and I think as a listener too, you're like, these things bug Prince too, like, wow, this like he's not that different. He really is, but he's but it doesn't seem like it, at least for these like 3 minutes of this song, right?
Yeah, totally.
He's asking a series of questions pretty much in the entire lyric.
Yep.
Don't you know straight hair ain't got no curl? He's asking a ton of questions, which is kind of cool. And like you talked about the beat earlier, that crispy, crunchy beat is just it's addictive. I love this song. I put this one, When You Were Mine, in my top five.
Yeah,
I mean, cool. I love this song.
It's Brett Motif, by the way, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, yeah. Hey, everybody. It's a great tune. I love it.
Okay, let's move on to number 11.
11.
All right, Controversy. This, I got to tell you, this was a song I was not familiar with when it came out. This was one that I kind of like doubled back on after I got into Prince. But I love it. And I just love, there's a part in there where it goes from the, I guess, in verse into the chorus that just like, I can't describe it. It's like sounds so cool. It almost gives you like little chills up your spine when he hits that. Just the way he's singing and the way that fits in with the groove, it's so great.
It's amazing. And when you think about the early period of Prince, I mean, for me, His debut came out in 1978. So again, right there with a lot of American new wave. So it was clear that he probably understood that. With For You, Prince in 1979, Dirty Mind in 1980, Controversy in 1981, 1999 and 1982. So from the very beginning, and even before 78, Prince worked extremely hard and he recorded a lot. And somehow he got a deal with Warner Brothers, a major label that gave him more or less artistic control over his first three records. And he basically laid out all the things he can do. And Controversy, the title track from his fourth album, really was the full flowering of that first period that owed a little more to Rick James. It was a little funkier. It was a little more, funk and R&B and a little harder and in some cases very raw when you got to the Dirty Mind album for the time, especially. But this was probably his first track that really showed he had more than just sort of a street sense of how to do funk and groove and work hard. He was aware of a lot of stuff going on, whether it was socioeconomic or political or whatever. And it's an amazing achievement for 1981.
Kevin Clement, were you talking about this song when you said it was your number one?
Yeah, this one, Controversy. Yeah, this was my number one pick. It's just freaking, of course, I didn't know it when it came out because I was like, I think eight, but came out afterwards and just love the funk and the falsetto, just everything about that song. Plus, you know, everything he's talking about, all controversy. It just makes for a perfect song in my mind anyway.
Yeah. It's really amazing. I'm happy this got on there. It was one of those ones that just barely didn't quite make the cut for my top 10. So I'm happy that it got on there for that other people voted totally. For it. So,
and I will add this, Bud Verge wrote on his ballot, Prince courts controversy by including the Lord's Prayer in the back half of the song. So not only was it topical, but he invoked religion too in this track.
Well, that's an interesting thing. It comes up from time to time, and mm-hmm. he always was trying to like sort of walk those two paths, right? Mm-hmm, a lot of mm-hmm. his music, yeah.
Totally.
The sinner and the saint, right? Yeah,
I think so. And I think like Bob Dylan, he was a very quick study, so he could understand different styles and what people are doing. But he also balanced those spiritual issues with totally out there desire and kind of like living in the times you're living in, too. So and I think, you know, mentioning the falsetto is great because it's like the first, I can't remember ever listening to a singer and thinking falsetto was cool, until I heard Prince, he pulled it off and, you know, it wasn't like in the '80s I ever heard doo-wop music or anything like that. I just heard what was on the radio and stuff.
All right. It's time for our first special guest. Don't you think, yay, Patrick?
Yes.
So I am going to welcome, let's see if I can get this to work. Here we go. I'm going to give you a little, I'm going to welcome to the show, Mr. Ricky Peterson. Ricky has a long history with Prince. He has produced and written music with Prince and played keyboards and has known him for a long time. And also, he also arranged this song right here. Welcome, Ricky P.
Hey, everybody. How are you?
Doing great, man. Good to hear you.
Doing
nice
great.
To
so,
see you. Thank you, man.
We met
hey,
Ricky.
Cousin?
Oh, yeah, he's cousins with BJ over there, wherever he is on the screen. So we met Ricky because we interviewed him for our podcast a while back when he was touring with Fleetwood Mac, playing keyboards with Fleetwood Mac, and we had a great time, didn't we, Patrick?
One of the funnest interviews I've ever done, as a matter of fact. It was so great.
So much fun.
We laughed a lot. It was good.
What a great guy. Good. And he told us some of these stories, but why don't you tell people here maybe aren't familiar a little bit about your background and how you got involved with working with Prince.
With Prince? Well, you know what? I come from a pretty musical family, and all of my siblings all play, you know, we all grew up playing. My mom and dad were both great musicians and jazz musicians, and we ended up kind of being surrounded by music our whole lives. So it was inevitable that we, you know, did something with it, I think, you know, because that's all we knew. It was like next door neighbors were, what does your dad play? You know, it's like, what? What do you mean? You know, so anyways, that's what we grew up with. And the background with Prince is just he and I actually. He would come out and see me play in the R&B bands that were around Twin Cities area. And we just kind of fell into place. I knew a friend of mine, Jimmy Bowman, is the one that introduced us. And Jimmy Bowman was the son of my father's best friend, Jimmy Bowman Sr. And he had something to do. He just knew the guys from the north side a little better than I did. And he brought me over to Prince's house, or not Prince's house, but one of Prince's buddies who let him rehearse in the basement, and he was rehearsing the actual, I believe it was the Revolution at the time. I don't even know if they had a name at that point. And there was a lot of different people. Andre Simone was down there, and I think Des Dickerson and all those guys were down there. And I think they had, I remember Lisa was down there. I don't think Wendy was on board yet. So anyways, we would go over there and we would jam and we would have a ball playing music. And that's how I got to know Prince. And that was probably 1978 or something, 1979. Something. You guys were kids.
Yes.
Yeah. So anyways, that's kind of was my introduction to Prince. And then it kind of went on. He wanted me to kind of be the keyboard player for the band. And I'll never forget. He and his manager at the time took me into the room into the living room of this guy's house. It was Peppy Willie, I think his name was. And he's a great guy. Anyways, we were in the living room. They asked me, "What are you interested in doing this?" And I said, "Sure. What, you know, we'd have some fun." Unbeknownst to me, knowing that I'd have to be doing dances and all that kind of stuff, it's like, no, that's not really my thing, you know. But the first thing they did was kind of a turnoff for me. So they said, "Well, this is what you can't do." And I'm like, "What? What do you mean? This is what I can't do?" You know what I mean?
Right.
So I'm like, "Wait a minute." Red flag goes right up, you know, and I just went, "Okay, well, listen, man, thanks for the offer, but I'm going to pass." And that was respectful, as respectful as I could be to Prince. And he actually respected that of me by turning him down. So, and then later on, of course, years later, we got back together and I went to see him. He was a big, huge star, and my big mistake, I guess. So he became a huge star, and he said, he was, "Come on, man, let's go ahead and see him backstage." And he was riding in his little golf cart and, "Hey, Ricky, how you doing?" And he was, you know, we were always kind of clowning around. He was always clowning. So, but I love the fact you guys have all the enthusiasm that you do for these tunes, and they're all great. And I have to say that Controversy is probably one of my favorites, too. So, and that was really where it was at when he was by himself in the studio doing all the experimental stuff with the synthesizers, you know. So, anyways, that's me talking now.
That's great. So, and by the way, if anybody has any questions for Ricky, feel free.
Totally.
You know, chime in, let us know. But talk a little bit about The Most Beautiful Girl in the World, because I know as we were playing it, Ed, you know, said it's in his personal top 10. So this is nice. You get to meet a real fan here.
Cool.
But how did that come about? And how did it come about that you arranged that song?
Well, you know what? I ended up having an office at Paisley Park for over 8 years. And I was doing a bunch of stuff with David Z. Do you know that name? David Z?
Yeah.
David Rifkin?
Yeah.
He's a producer. He and I played a lot together, worked together a lot. We did stuff like Fine Young Cannibals and Colin Hay.
Yeah.
And we did a bunch of different things. The Jets, if you guys remember the Jets.
Yeah.
We did. That was one of our first big productions that we ever did together. But we worked together a lot, so we ended up at Paisley Park, of course. Where else would we go? In the best, recording facility in the Twin Cities. So, anyways, Prince, that's kind of how we got back together. And Prince said, yeah, take a room. We got a room upstairs for you, man. So I had an office up there. Had a nice little studio in there. And he knew that I was like filling up the rooms with different projects with David and I. And I at the time was playing with David Sanborn for many years. So I'd be gone, half the summers and stuff, but I'd be back and I'd have my place up there. And he just kind of threw me a bone pretty much, but he said, well, here, I want to see what you can do with this. He handed me, first thing I think it was, Nona Gay. There was a song that he wrote for her, and I'm trying to remember the name of it. Do you guys know? Do you know the history of Nona? That's Marvin Gaye's kid.
Right.
Okay.
Only marginally, yeah.
Yeah, and she did a song, I think it was, I can't remember. But anyways, I produced that for her. And then he threw Mavis Staples at me. And he had written a bunch of stuff for Mavis, The Voice. It was called The Voice, the record. And I ended up producing a lot of that for her. And then a Chaka Khan tune, a couple of Chaka tunes on her record when she was hanging around there. And then he went, because nobody really ever produced Prince. I think David Z was the closest with Kiss.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he did put that whole tune together, but Prince loved it. He said, I'm doing that song. He did it for the Wild Pair, if you remember those guys at all. And there was two guys, I can't remember the name. Of course, it's 40 years ago, so.
Totally.
I'm not that old. he ended up handing me a cassette of this song that he had written. He said, see what you can do with this. And I remember playing the cassette, and the cassette was a garbled mess, man. It sounded like this. He had a lot of things that he would do with his keyboard that was really low and kind of grumbly and weird and undecipherable, But he had his guitar lick on there, and his vocals.
Yeah.
So he said, here, fix this. So I took the record and I remember going back in the studio with Tom Tucker, who was my partner at the time. The great engineer, Tom Tucker, did a lot of the mixes for Prince for years. And we went in. I said, what do you think of this, man? What do you think? They said, oh, it's a smash. And I went, really? Because I didn't get it at the time. I actually didn't get it. I was going, okay, well, let me mess with it. So I came up with this. That's about what I could decipher from it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I made that, and I had a bunch of different people play. I had Paul Peterson come in, my little brother, who was kind of excommunicated from the Prince factory at that point, so he didn't even know it was Paul playing bass on it. And I had a guy by the name of Jimmy Berenger playing guitar, and he did kind of the wah-wah stuff on it, the wah-wah stuff, and that was pretty cool. But everything else, of course, was Prince, and I had Michael Bland play drums on it, and I had a nice little loop, so we were very popular back then. So I put a loop on it, and he ended up coming in and going, holy shit. he was like, what? So he was pretty intrigued with what I did with that song. And then he got all excited and he came in and he would be giving me, not pointers, but he would telling me little things. He was like creating. He's such a creative cat, man. He was just always nonstop, he was nonstop creative. So we have all these ideas and it was like writing a movie. I mean, he's like picturing all these things and the little, you'll hear little effects that are in that song that he made me put in there. And with like clocks when he's talking about time, it's the time or whatever, I can't remember, but there's clocks and there's one that I really remember. And of course, all the sound effects are, all that stuff I did with my mouth mostly. And then like breezes and all that kind of stuff. Of course, the clock was the clock. We found a sample of a clock. But when he sings Tears of Joy, that's me doing this. Like that. When you hear it, if you go back and listen to it, you're going to freak out because that's what it was. It was very funny.
Did you get a credit in the liner notes for that? Yeah, you
wouldn't give me
cheek
credit.
On cheek, Ricky P. Yeah.
Well, actually, you know what? This is one of the only songs that I was a co-producer with him on that I actually ended up producing that record for him and arranging it. And that was his last number one hit.
Yeah.
True.
Yep.
Yeah.
So.
Wow.
But that's my story with that one, and I'm sticking to it.
big hit song, as you mentioned. And how did you feel when that song had such success?
Man, I, you know, elated, of course. When you started hearing that stuff on the radio, it was like, that's me. Of course. We were still kids. I mean, not kids, but you know, I was in my 30s. You know, that's a pretty big deal. It was Prince, and he was kind of towards the end or anything like that. He was still a big star, man, you know, but he didn't have as many hits as he did in the 80s, you know, at that particular point. And the next one, I'll just tell you this, the next stuff that I did for him, and I think it was Gold, as you know, I produced Gold, a lot of stuff on that record. I Hate You, remember that song? You know? That was one of his other last hits that he had.
Yeah.
It was after Most Beautiful Girl, and that was me also. But anyways, that's my hang with Prince, and I was there till about 96. And sorry, it's a lot of information to take.
That's good.
You asked, so are you? Did you ask?
Yeah, no, well, that's great stuff. Go ahead.
I was going to say, Ricky, I think A Woman's Gotta Have It. Was that the Nona Gay track?
Yes, it was.
Okay.
I think, exactly right.
Thank you, Internet.
Gotta have it.
That's it. Yeah.
Exactly right. Yeah. I like that one.
Yeah, Bobby Womack, right? Isn't that a Bobby Womack?
Yeah, it was Bobby Womack.
Very cool. Anyone have any questions for Ricky? Anyone out there?
No questions, but Ricky, from a fan, I've just got to say thanks. Thank you very much. Because Beautiful Girl, I Hate You, and I think the Gold album, in my opinion, is by far the most underrated Prince album. My favorite album from him personally.
You know what? It was some of the best. He was so excited about that record, you guys, and I think it was really a breaker for him that it didn't become a huge success, because it was successful, of course, but that record was his baby, man. He put his heart and soul so heavily into that record, man. And the tune Gold itself was just, he said, he was like, this is it. This is my guy. This is it. Yeah. So it was really a wonderful time, you know, when that all was coming down and I was there, you know, I was there and I watched it happen. I played on it, did most of the stuff on it. So I just saw how happy he was. He was just, had big smiles, man. So it was fun. Fun to watch. But thank you guys. I appreciate it.
Oh, that's great. Let's just say Ricky's done pretty well for himself also.
let me ask you this one last thing, Ricky, before you go, just personally, how are you holding up with the pandemic? How is it for a musician this year?
It sucks.
Yeah. I'm sure.
Really, there's actually, we're able to do a couple of things, you know. We're doing outdoor live things where people are coming in. It's like drive-in movie stuff. And we have a place called Crooners that we're out going to play at. And I think that they're actually getting it together a little bit to do something like that, maybe with Stevie Nicks, you know, because I've been playing with her for the last 13 years. And of course, the last 3 years with Fleetwood. And we just got done doing a whole thing for Peter Green. Do you guys know who Peter Green is?
Yeah. I'd heard of him, yeah.
Peter Green was the actual founder of Fleetwood Mac back in 67.
Right.
And he was a blues cat. And we did a big movie last February right before the pandemic hit, you guys. We were at the Palladium in London. And we had superstars come in and play guitar, man. We had David Gilmour. We had, I mean, it was nuts. It was so much fun. Anyways, they're talking about doing things together and doing some outdoor things. And to tell you the truth, it probably won't happen until June of next year, man. To tell you the truth.
Yeah.
You know, so it's kind of a drag, but we're all doing music in the studios.
In the studio.
passing them around Zoom and doing that kind of thing. So.
That's good to hear. But yeah, I mean, I don't know if this has quite come through for all you people, but this is Ricky's career is touring around like major rock concerts, you know, and big venues around the world and stuff. And all of a sudden it just all, you know, ground to a halt,
kinda
right?
Big. Yep.
Yeah. So,
I mean, I feel bad for all the guys in the crews and all that stuff. Yeah. I mean, there were so many concerts lined up for this year. It was just like, and these did, and they're all out of work, man. You know, yeah. I mean, there's fundraisers and all sorts of stuff for people that are doing that. You know, and we're lucky enough to maybe bank a little bit, but and hopefully they did too. But it's like, you know, it's devastating, man. I mean, it's devastating for all musicians and all music. But I'm glad for you guys doing this kind of thing. That really helps, you know, bring up the spirits. So thank you. Appreciate it.
That's a small thing, but thank you, Ricky. To everyone. Right, round of applause,
thank you, Ricky.
For Ricky.
See you later. Thanks. Love to hear you, man.
Thanks.
Let's get back to the countdown, right?
All right. Where were we? I was so mesmerized, I forgot where we were.
We are heading into the top 10 now.
Oh, all right. Let's do it.
All right, there we go. I can never take the place of your man from Sign of the Times. I love this song. I think I have a kindred spirit in Mike Wagner, who posted the chat that he loves the song as well. But you know, to me, not only I'd really love this record, as we have discussed earlier on the podcast, but also this song in particular, I think. Part of the reason I really liked it too was because it seemed coverable by a lot of like my friends' bands. like people would play this, you know, a lot. It was because it's kind of a straightforward rock song.
Yeah.
And but it's very hooky and fun and driving and then I also just think lyrically too, it's an interesting song too when you start to think about it. You know, it's from the male perspective, but he's basically sort of backing off, like, nah, I'm not gonna hook up with you, right? So it also isn't different for Prince, I think, right? So
totally. And Harris King, I believe, is on the podcast here. And Harris, you left a message, a comment at the end of your ballot or on your ballot you know, about this song. What do you say? And you mentioned in the chat too that you really like this. Talk a little bit about this song from your perspective, if you wouldn't mind.
It's just a great song. First of all, this album is my favorite album by Prince, and I think it's just, you know, I was 16 when it came out, and I clearly knew Purple Rain, but I don't know, it was so big, it was so important, double album, it was dealing with all these different you know, societal issues or just making a statement, but the songs are so great. There are so many dance songs, or like Kevin just said in the chat, this song is a driving rock song. It doesn't let up. Mm-hmm. And as far as what I put in the, when I voted, what my comments were, I'm not sure what I said anymore. You'll have to remind me.
Well, it was cool. You said such a good groove that you can't help but start moving, but that's a common refrain with many Prince songs, and that's really well said. You're right. I mean, it's not just this one, but it's many, but this one, man, does a great job of it. Really does.
I love the drums in it, too.
Great. Yeah.
Love it.
You know, and it's interesting, too, hearing Ricky speak, which was just amazing and enlightening, but, you know, talking about putting a little sound effects on a song with a clock, you know, when he mentions time and all that stuff. But then when Prince paired stuff back like this, he was able to do it really well. Although, I gotta say, too, it reminds me of one of his spiritual heirs and musical heirs, Hendrix. When you listen to a Hendrix record, yeah, it sounds pretty stripped back, but kind of like BJ was saying, there's a lot of subtleties, like little things you might not notice, like one extra vocal track that might be really similar, but then it just separates for a minute. So minimalist, yes, but also knowing how to get the most out of every single touch he put on a piece of music, and that's very obvious in this song.
I love it. This is a top five for me.
Oh, great. Very strong song. It's interesting. A lot of the early votes that came in didn't mention this song, and then all of a sudden, it gained a lot of momentum. So I don't know if it was people thinking more about, you know, their top 10 and, like, paring stuff down, but all of a sudden, you know, I'm never going to take the place of your man. I can never take the place of your man really shot up there. And also, interesting, I just wanted to note this, Jim, from the extensive voter tallying I was doing.
Yes, you're on top of that, man. You're like an accountant over there in Falls Church.
I may be hired by the Falls Church Election Commission for school board, not city council, but some people titled this, "I Could Never Take the Place of Your Lover." So I thought that was interesting.
I think they're confusing that with a different song that perhaps may or may not come up later. Yep. I don't know. Okay.
I want to be you.
All right. We're going to pause here and pick up again tomorrow with more. Just real quickly, our thanks to Ricky Peterson for joining us. Always a great guest.
How great is that guy? Not only was he super nice the first time we interviewed him, to jump on and tell his stories and have that keyboard there with him.
Yes.
It was really great.
That was the best.
Was so cool. I don't have to talk about it. I can show you with musical notes, and that was excellent.
He's the best.
Yeah.
Okay, so with that, we are now into the top 10, so you're going to want to keep listening the rest of the week. I can't imagine why you wouldn't.
No, not at this point. If you come this far, you got to stick with us.
All right, so with that, I'm Jim Linehan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
And we'll talk to you guys tomorrow.
How did he become such an amazing record creator, BJ, in your opinion?
He's really talented.